We are in a sermon series on wisdom found in the book of Proverbs. And so I'd like to start us out this morning by just sharing two short personal stories. So the first story is this. So after my last semester of my undergrad degree, I had just graduated, I took an internship with the Indiana House of Representatives. I was a registered independent at that time, but I actually took the internship with the Communications Department of the Republican Party. Don't be too shocked. It was spring 2001. It was time for redistricting conversations, right? After the 2000 census, then everybody kind of relooks at the maps to make sure that they make sense. So the House Minority Leader came into our office. Republicans were actually the minority at that time, and had four interns in the office gather around him. And he took out a map and he laid it in front of us and he proceeded to teach us how gerrymandering worked and how he was using it for the proposed maps coming from his political party. Both parties were proposing maps. And it was blatant, and I have to say, like, in my young naivete, I was a little shocked at just how openly this was being done. So it was either, I can't remember when it was either later that evening or sometime later that week, there was a press conference that was held to talk about the minority proposed maps. And I will never forget going into that press conference, standing in the back as an intern, and watching that guy talk on camera on the first floor of the Capitol building. And of course, reporters asked him, you know, about gerrymandering. Was that part of the discussions at all? They asked him specifically, were the race of constituents part of any of these conversations about how maps were being drawn, also illegal? He insisted, absolutely not. None of that was going on. You know, we're just trying to make common sense changes. We're grouping people together with common interests. It absolutely was going on, right? He had taught us, it was either earlier that day or earlier that week. And I don't remember much else about that man. He did go on to become the Speaker of the House for many years there. But I do remember he was doing something that wasn't legal and that he had told a bold-faced lie to the media. After that internship, I moved up here to Ann Arbor and I was working in public relations for Borders Books. Probably remember the national chain that is no longer in existence. But there were only four of us doing PR for the whole country, right? So it was like a VP, a director, a manager, and then, you know, me on the low level at 23, 24 years old. And so we usually would work together, especially if something particularly like kind of tricky came up. And one day I actually got the call for this. A reporter called and they said, you know, we've got some parents that are finding adult magazines in the kids sections of the bookstores on the regular in a certain part of the country. And the Family Research Council or whoever that organization was that used to like boycott Disney and stuff in the 90s, if you remember them, that they were ready to create some big brouhaha and they were ready to boycott. Did we have any comment? Yeah, I'll get back with you on that, right? So they pulled the PR team and they pulled the executives into a room and I was prepared to be asked to help create, you know, defensive talking points to reframe the situation, minimize it. But this time I was pleasantly surprised, right? One of the executives immediately said, you know what, I'm with the parents. I wouldn't want my kids to find that. And we need to apologize, and we need to do it to the parents, and we need to apologize to the community. And then over the course of the next, you know, few minutes, I think he was the VP of like store operations or something, but he was like, I want to see how all the stores are laid out and everything that we build going forward, the kids section and the magazines need to be far away. If we need to retrofit some of the current stores where this is a problem, let's do that. Let's get managers sweeping through the kids sections every half an hour. I mean, it was like boom, boom, boom. And I was just a little taken aback. I was like, what, honesty? Taking responsibility? That guy, I'll say his name, I won't say the first guy's name, but his name was Steve Davis, and that is what I remember about him. That's the most striking memory I have of that man. I think he still lives in Ann Arbor, you might know him. So all of this to say, character matters, right? It's what people remember about us. It's the witness that we leave in people's lives, right? Showing especially good character or especially bad character in some instances is the main thing that people often remember us by. So David Brooks, who's a New York Times writer, he calls it eulogy virtues. And I saved some articles through the years, and so this is from an article of his that I saved a few years back that I thought was poignant. He said, it occurred to me there were two sets of virtues. You have the resume virtues and the eulogy virtues. Right? The resume virtues are the skills you bring to the marketplace. The eulogy virtues are the ones that are talked about at your funeral. Whether you were kind, brave, honest, or faithful, were you capable of deep love? So we know resume virtues, help us get ahead at work. There's often a lot of emphasis on those, especially early on in our careers. I would imagine that a city like Ann Arbor might be a little bit more true even than other communities, given that I think we're still considered the most educated city in the United States. And if not, it's one of the most educated, just meaning by the number of degrees or highest degrees per capita. So a lot of people come to this part of the country or stay in this part of the country to build career skills and get degrees, but there's not a degree for eulogy virtues. And yet eulogy virtues are how we will more likely be remembered by people around us. They're the things that will help us be most successful in our personal relationships, the ones that enrich our lives. And that includes allowing us to be respected in our workplaces in ways that go beyond accomplishments, right, or aptitude for strategy. You can be really great at corporate strategy or political strategy in the case of my one person here. You can make a lot of money, you can move up the ranks, but still be known as kind of a jerk. And so the book of Proverbs is deeply concerned with eulogy virtues, right, with character. And it knows we need some guidelines, and I think it offers us some things to aim for. So let's start with Proverbs 10:2. Ill-gotten treasures have no lasting value, but righteousness delivers from death. And so Proverbs talks a lot about how having money, having wealth, is not the most important thing in life. But righteousness is held up. Right? It says righteousness delivers from death. And that might sound dramatic, it might sound a little super spiritual or something, but I think it's just trying to drill into us that developing good character is that important to a life that works well. Right? That word righteousness is the same word for justice in Hebrew. I think the word righteousness can sometimes feel a little inaccessible to us in English, right? We don't often talk about people being righteous unless it's like Ferris Bueller, right? He's like a righteous dude, for those of you who remember that. But pursuing righteousness just means seeking integrity in everything that we do. Like, that's the individual element of it. And it means seeking justice for all. That's sort of the collective part of righteousness. So it's personal integrity, collective justice. So I want to read this saying from the Talmud. This is a commentary on this particular proverb. Rabbi Yehuda used to say, 10 strong things were created in the world. A mountain is strong, but iron cuts through it. Iron is strong, but fire can make it bubble. Fire is strong, but water puts it out. Water is strong, but clouds can contain it. Clouds are strong, but the wind can scatter them. Breath or wind is strong, but the body holds it in. The body is strong, but fear breaks it. Fear is strong, but wine dissipates its effects. Wine is strong, but sleep overcomes its power, thankfully. Death is stronger than all of them. But righteousness saves from death, as it is written, and righteousness saves from death. So in other words, the strongest things in the world have limits. But the pursuit of righteousness knows no limits, and it helps us to overcome everything else, even death. Right? So selfish living keeps us detached from true life, from living our best lives, and it keeps us detached from the one who gives us life. But righteousness connects us to the creator of life. Right? So we take a growth mindset, right, in regards to pursuing good character. Right? Nobody is perfect. It's a lifelong process of practice, part of learning from mistakes. Sometimes we make tragic mistakes. Sometimes we make mistakes that make us laugh years later. I know that's the case for me a lot. This path is what Thomas Jefferson was likely talking about when he wrote the Declaration of Independence in the first article, when he said that we should have the right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. That phrase, pursuit of happiness, might be better understood today if we said the pursuit of being good. So most of us probably don't think of pursuing happiness as like, or we probably think of it as more like the pursuit of pleasure. At least that's how I would often think about it. And for the record, there's nothing wrong with pursuing pleasure, right, within limits. But the legal scholar Jeffrey Rosen, he says, classical and Enlightenment thinkers defined happiness as the pursuit of virtue, as being good, rather than feeling good. So the classical definition of the pursuit of happiness meant something more like being a lifelong learner with a commitment to practicing the daily habits that lead to character improvement, self-mastery, flourishing, and growth. Right, so people used to talk more about having like virtues to live by. Now, I don't know how many of you will remember this, but there's an old Merchant Ivory film from the 1980s. It was called A Room with a View. It's kind of a cult classic. A few of you have seen it. It was based on an E.M. Forster novel. In this movie, there's a man who's called George. And there's a scene where George is picnicking with some of his friends and family, and he's also picnicking with a woman that he's interested in. It was a very young Helena Bonham Carter. She was probably like 20. Right, so they're out picnicking. They're in the hills of Florence, Italy, and George, a full-grown man, climbs into a tree and starts shouting into the echoing hills. He says, "Beauty! Joy! Love!" And someone, I think it's like a cranky Maggie Smith, says, "What's he doing?" And George's father's like, "Why, he's just saying his creed." All right, a creed, just a statement of something that you believe in and that you live by. Right? Christianity has creeds, a lot of faith traditions do. But people would often use just virtues as guiding creeds in their lives. Right? So Aristotle had four cardinal virtues. They were prudence, justice, temperance, and courage. If you remember, like prudence, just like being cautious, being deliberate about decisions. Temperance, we often think of as like not drinking at all, but it's really just not excessive use of anything, right? So it's not a bad list to live by. So a couple of weeks ago, I was just reading through Proverbs, and I decided to just try and boil down the main themes of all of these different sayings into a list that could almost be like a creed to live by. Like if I were living by Proverbs, it would look like this. And so my list came to these six. Actually, you could try it. It's kind of a fun exercise, and you might come up with different things. But here are the six I landed on. Honesty, prudence, justice, industriousness, I'll come back to that, temperance or self-control, and humility. And humility mostly about like being teachable, knowing that you can't go it alone in life, needing friends, needing to be a good friend, like learning how to have good relationships. And so these seem to be the main concerns of the people who pass down the Proverbs to us. Now, sometimes I think Proverbs can get a little bit sidelined because Proverbs 31 has been like so misused against modern women, it's a little hard to take the book seriously, especially if that has been wielded against you in any significant way. Do we have any Proverbs 31 women, or ex-Proverbs 31, you know, if you went through those, I see a couple of hands. The book does have some gender norm stuff that I would say just has some, you know, some more ancient values in it, but I think it's also fine to just kind of, you know, brush aside some of the things that are more time-bound and hold on to what is helpful, right, that there's treasure that's here. I think it can also be easy to sideline Proverbs and the virtues that it talks about because it just sounds a little bit puritanical, right? Like prudence, temperance, industriousness. It's like, you know, what is this, the Scarlet Letter? But I think just because some groups, like the Puritans, have taken certain values all the way to some extreme doesn't mean that you have to throw the baby out with the bathwater, right? So I kind of imagine it as like, let's say we've got our virtues that are here in the center and there's this sort of spectrum here, right? On one end of the spectrum, you could just throw them all out and say, gosh, it just all sounds really quaint. But if we do that, I think our lives actually might work less well, right? Because arrogance and dishonesty and uncontrolled impulses don't tend to bode well, right, for good relationship keeping. But on the other end, if we take them to the extreme, our lives also don't really thrive because there's just like no pleasure allowed. Or we know, like, you can take anything to an extreme. Even honesty can be overdone. Every now and again, a small white lie can just, like, smooth over something that might help somebody keep from being embarrassed, or it might keep something that from being so painful for someone. And I think that there's, like, room for talking about that, right? So you can get over-strict about anything, that, you know, about what we think is okay or not okay. But within reason, I really think that virtues are a helpful guidepost. The Catholic Church has seven virtues that they use to confront like the seven deadly sins, right? Each sin has a corresponding opposite virtue. They're slightly different here than the virtues of Proverbs. I know some of you grew up Catholic. Did any of you guys like grow up with like the seven virtues? No? Okay, less strict about that. That's good. Well, I put the word industriousness in my list because I see it in Proverbs quite a bit. And so you might wonder about that being a virtue. It's what the Catholics call diligence, so they put it sort of opposite to sloth and diligence, right? It's just hard work, Apparently, that's what my name means, which is really unfortunate. Emily just means like industrious one, and I find that very uninspiring. But the far end of the philosophical spectrum, there's a stream of people who feel that like working hard is like a mark of capitalist oppression, right? That you're just toiling for your rich overlords. You laugh, Paul, but man, there's a whole movement called anti-work. And people talk about the evil of corporations, and they talk about their goal of some of the anti-work folks is to like subvert the whole system by working as little as possible while eking the most they can out of the system. Some of you have heard of this, I can tell, right? It's like, yeah, I know some of you have. Yeah, like you get a really good job and then you just do as little as possible at that job until they fire you and then you go get another job. But you just take the income, take the benefits, and that's sort of the idea of it. And we know there's truth to corporate exploitation being a problem. There's truth to the dehumanization of employees in some companies more than others. But I think just to say like work is evil or something to avoid or actively undermine, just, it kind of misses something. I think most of us like to feel that we're contributing to our families and to our communities in meaningful ways, and we find value in that. I've actually been reading a book where the author went across the country interviewing working class people to get a sense of concerns on the ground, especially of people who are like struggling to make bills month to month. And I know that that's some of us here, and it was me in my 20s. A theme that quickly emerged was that people often feel judged. Right, they feel like some of the more educated parts of the political class talk about them like they're lazy and they just want handouts. But we often know people who need assistance are often working their tails off, right? And I think of caregivers like my mom who work around the clock and don't get paid for it. And so the people that they interviewed are proud of working hard, right? Work brings dignity. It's why when people get injured on the job and are unable to keep working, they can often get really depressed. So there's clearly something that's sort of between like laziness and being a capitalist peon that I think can like honor how most of us experience our work. And that's the industriousness that we're talking about here, right? Taken to either extreme, it's not life-giving, but I think in moderation, I think that that can be a virtue. I'm gonna leave you with one last proverb and a little bit of a challenge. So if it's something that seems helpful to you, I would just challenge you to, if you have time over the next week or even just a few weeks, maybe just sort of mull over some of the virtues that you might want to have as a personal creed if you were to have one. You know, like what eulogy virtues would you want to be known for? They don't have to be things in the Proverbs. I kind of like beauty. I think seeking beauty is a lovely creed to live by. And so if you had to come up with maybe 4 to 6, what would those be? Let me end with Proverbs 22:1-4. A good name is more desirable than great riches. To be esteemed is better than silver or gold. Rich and poor have this in common. The Lord is the maker of them all. The prudent see danger and take refuge, but the simple keep going and pay the penalty. Humility is the fear of the Lord. Its wages are riches and honor and life. All right, and with that, we often follow the service with a little just silence or guided meditation. And I thought I would just offer to you, if you want to, just take a little bit of time here in the silence to consider some of the virtues that matter most to you. Maybe things you appreciate in others, maybe things you appreciate in yourself. You could think about somebody who maybe you think of as having good character and what stands out about that. I think part of building wisdom, which is what we're seeking to do in this, is just really paying attention, slowing down, and being deliberate about thinking through what we want to emulate, who we want to emulate, and who we want to be. So people make noise, but other than that, we'll just sit in the silence, Spirit come. So Creator, even in the bustle of the end of summer, school starting and trying to eke out the last fun times outside for the next month, I ask that you would just help us to see over these coming weeks, and especially this coming week, slow us down if we see somebody like exhibiting really good character. Maybe slow us down and help us to pause and consider some of the things that are going on inside of us, and help us consider the kind of people that we want to be in these sort of maybe pivotal moments of conversations with friends or family or bosses or people we manage. Just help us to make these little spaces, just kind of, the word I want is like sort of arrest us a little, like help us to pause and notice. And maybe even just speak words of encouragement when we see people exhibiting traits that we find that are really just kind and generous and toward building community. In your name we pray. Amen.